to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have Justin and Eric from the Paratruth Radio podcast. They have some very interesting stories to share with us, and we're going to get right into it right after these brief messages and a short promo for Paratruth Radio podcast.
You awaken in a cold sweat. Your heart races and your breath quickens. It's 3 a.m. and you're not alone. Something lurks in the corner of the room, and it's darker than the night.
You're deep in the woods, enjoying a family camping trip. Marshmallows roast and laughs are shared until something screams from behind the ridge. It's neither human nor animal, but something in between. You can't see it, but it sees you.
You're driving down a dark, lonely road, singing along to your favorite song, when something dressed in white crosses your path. You swerve to an immediate stop and check your rearview mirror, but nothing's there.
The people are real, and the stories are legend.
The problem is that legends are often riddled in myth.
We uncover the truth. Tune in to Paratruth Radio every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, anywhere podcasts are found.
Today I have Justin and Eric from the Paratruth Radio podcast. How you doing, guys?
Doing very good. How are you?
Excellent. I mean, Paratruth, I really like that. Paratruth Radio, how'd that come about for the title?
Yeah, well, when Justin and I first started about 13 years ago, we had a show called Night Stalkers, Night Stalkers Paranormal Radio. And we ended up at some point down the line splitting ways. You know, we kind of wanted to do our own thing, take the show in two opposite directions. And when we did that, Justin started his own show for another network called Parasite Radio. And I went off, started my own thing with Para X, and my show was called Forgotten Truth Radio. I came in with more of a Christian aspect for my own beliefs regarding the paranormal. And Justin kind of went in at a different way. And, you know, at one point, we both kind of just, I think it maybe 2 years, we were on our own, and we both kind of quit, took a leave of absence from radio altogether. And then one day, I think it was like 2013, maybe 2014, something like that. Justin texted me and he's like, hey, so I've kind of got the itch to get back into paranormal radio. I was wondering if you'd want to join me. And, you know, at the time I was like, oh, I don't know. He already left me once. I don't really want to necessarily, you know, but I took a chance on him and we came together and we decided the best option was to bring our two shows together to kind of mend them, blend it all up. And we came up with Paratruth. It's a part of his show, which is Parasite, and mine, which was Forgotten Truth.
I like that, you know, because I had a past guest on it where paranormal investigators out of Oklahoma, and the whole team was diversified. I mean, a preacher, an atheist, a Buddhist. I can't remember them all, you know.
That but sounds like a really bad joke. Is there a punchline?
No, but they kind of like they said, they all rounded each other out. Kind of a little bit like you guys. You kind of round each other out because maybe you could look at a different angle. What led you into the paranormal to begin with? I'll start with you, Eric.
Yeah. Well, I always kind of grew up really interested in it. My house, actually the house that I'm currently living in, was haunted when my mom and my uncle, Justin's father, were kids living in this house. So when I was growing up, it was haunted. My sisters and I always saw a lot of shadow figures, unexplainable noises, footsteps coming up the stairs, especially the basement, which is really haunted. And even to this day, I still witness these things on a regular basis. Various lights, shadows, a lot of interesting nightmares, which always happens when I have, you know, I'm in a haunted area. Got me interested. I started reading a lot into demonology, ghost hunting, that kind of stuff. I'd be lying if I didn't say that Supernatural, the TV show, kind of helped factor in some of those things, just, you know, really bringing that joy out of the supernatural. But right before Justin and I started the show, I had ended up going through 3 months of demonic oppression and affliction. This was something that was just very new to me and absolutely horrifying. full black masses just standing in front of me, running down the hall. I'd be chasing after it. Nightmares, night terrors. I'd wake up screaming, literally screaming Bible verses as I wake up to try to protect myself, feeling something brush my hair, touch my face, sit on my bed. All I could think of is like a dog of some sort growling in the middle of the night at my bedroom door, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was really rough for 3 months. And, you know, with all of that combined, I think one night Justin and I were just sitting around a table doing what we love to do, and that was drinking. And you know, when you drink and you like the paranormal, you come up with weird ideas, and one was, let's start a paranormal podcast.
Yours is probably a little different, Justin. I mean, coming at a different angle, were you brought up maybe not believing in ghosts?
No, I was a Christian at the time. I was baptized Protestant, kind of the same lines as Eric, because Eric was brought up Catholic. And I was just really curious. My parents got divorced when I was in my early teens. And so I was showing interest in the paranormal. My stepmom at the time had got me interested in using a Ouija board. We got a Ouija board for Christmas, ended up using it a couple of times, did not like some of the things that the Ouija board had to say. So the Ouija board went away. Then after a couple of years, that kind of faded, that interest, at least in the Ouija board. And I started dabbling with tarot cards. So that interest was still there. It just took on a different form. And then, you know, around that time, too, I had kind of lost my faith a lot, too, because a lot of things were happening, not just my parents being divorced, but I was seeing things and thinking to myself, you know, if there really is a God, how can there be so much pain in the world? So I had kind of really fallen out of my faith, and it took being in the paranormal community to bring me back, because if I could believe in angels, demons, ghosts, aliens, Loch Ness Monster, who's to say that there wasn't an higher power that brought all that about? So I started more of believing agnostic. Yeah, there's something there, but I don't really know what it is. But all of that had formed my opinion of the paranormal. And I mean, to this day, I still follow the Christian faith. I do believe that there's more to it than just the Christian faith, where other Christians would say, no, you're wrong. That's kind of where my point of view comes from, is more of the mainstream paranormal. You know, ghosts are ghosts, human spirits that walk the earth. Aliens are extraterrestrials from another planet, stuff like that. And I've, you know, doing Paratruth Radio, I've come to respect Eric's opinions. And I think he's kind of come to respect mine as well. We don't always agree on everything, but actually, believe it or not, Eric and I have started believing a little bit more of the same stuff doing Paratruth Radio. So it's been an interesting ride so far.
I kind of like connect with both you guys, you know, both your stories. I mean, I grew up too, young teenager when my parents divorced. And I started out as a Baptist and then converted over to be a Catholic when I married my wife, because you have to be Catholic to be married in a Catholic church. You know, but, you know, I was looking at some of your past episodes. I got to tell you, I like your podcast. I love your podcast, Paratruth Radio. I put it in my playlist now.
Awesome.
The one today was investigating a cemetery.
We did actually two, one in Bismarck, one in Fargo. Pretty sure we didn't really catch any evidence. There were some experiences, which Eric can attest to what he had come across. But both areas, Bismarck, I'm a sensitive, and I really didn't feel a whole lot. I mean, people believe, oh, cemetery, there has to be spirits there. Well, I wouldn't want to be around the body that I inhabited for 80, 90 plus years. I'd want to roam around. So, I mean, people believe that cemeteries are haunted. Not all of them. I do believe that some spirits may just be caught. But in Fargo, I was picking up some whatever it was, but there was people talking about in the mausoleum that if you put your recorder up to the door, that you will hear a banging. And I'll have Eric describe how we debunked that. But he also had something happen while we were doing a small EVP session by the crematorium, which is right next to the mausoleum, too. But both of those areas were, I mean, it was cool. Very beautiful scenery. Oh, Eric, I don't know if we shared this on our podcast, but we had turkeys chasing us.
Oh, we did. It was like a scene out of Jurassic Park. Like, it was crazy. We're literally driving the car away from them, and they're chasing us down to the entire cemetery.
Maybe they were ghost turkeys.
All those Thanksgiving turkeys from last year.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting because we had all this wildlife around us. So it was like, you know, are we being shown something or what? But Eric, I'll have you go into some of the stuff that, you know, how we debunked that and what happened at the crematorium with your, when you were doing, I think it was a video, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one thing I just want to throw in there real quick, for anyone who doesn't investigate or maybe hasn't done it much, it's actually very difficult to collect evidence most of the time. You spend hours and hours and hours just kind of twiddling your thumbs, asking questions with no response. So, you know, when we see, you see the stuff on TV where people are getting, you know, these ghost hunters are getting evidence like crazy. I hate to say that it's all fake. Unfortunately, some of it is. It's television. But I think the fact that Justin and I could stand here and say, oh yeah, we invested, or sit here and say we investigated two cemeteries and caught nothing visually or on audio in terms of evidence, doesn't mean that we didn't witness something. And that's what Justin was attesting to. So the one thing, I'll actually just talk about what happened. Justin was asking questions with his digital voice recorder, and I was shooting some video while we were doing these investigations. I was actually creating content for a small documentary that I'm creating, a small series. And as I was filming him asking questions, this, I don't know what happened, like the screen went black, like something passed in front of it and then went out of focus. And then when it moved, it went back into focus and the video became clear again. And I thought that was really weird because the video shouldn't go in and out of focus, you know, unless there's something in between me and Justin. And so I went to try to debunk it. And of course, you know, the only time it went out of focus was when I put my hand up close to the lens and it did it mimicked the exact same thing that I'd seen. So I don't know what exactly happened. I mean, it's very possible maybe that a spirit somehow, not visible to my own eyes, but manifested it and the video picked it up and focused on that before going back to Justin. But again, I don't really know. It's just one of those experiences and we're kind of lost at it.
And Eric wasn't recording at that time.
Of course too. I wasn't.
Didn't even get
yeah.
Well, you know, I thought on my own personal, the spirit will pick who they want to talk to, you know, or whenever you have your EVPs or your spirit box or your infrared cameras, whatever you're using. In my cases, I wasn't getting nothing. You know, it's like, come on, man. I mean, I'm getting these stories that this place is haunted or this bridge is haunted. So I go there, but nothing was happening to me. It wasn't until I turned the equipment off that I was pushed from behind or my ears flicked or a cool breeze went through me. It's 90 some degrees outside, you know, so it's those moments where I'm contacted after my stuff's off, you know, and it's like 9 times out of 10, that's always happened, you know, so I wasn't, or, you know, you'll go in some places that you won't get nothing, you know, it's just not going to be a good night, you know, and you had another one too, where you were like under a willow tree with a lady in the park.
Okay. Yeah. So Trolley Park, and that was over in Fargo or outside of Fargo, actually. And we really wanted to do this investigation in the dark. Problem is that the park closed at dark or at dusk. So we had to sneak way in the back and just hid out until everything went black. And then we just stayed out there and did our investigation. And this was actually the first, well, at least it was the first investigation that Justin's wife was on with us, with me there. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of cool to have her there. She didn't really know what she was doing. She's like, well, how do I ask questions and what's the best questions to ask? And which are all, you know, which in and of themselves are great questions to be asking somebody if you're doing it for the first time. But the benefit of that was, and this is, I guess, in my own opinion, if it's an intelligent haunting and people have investigated, these intelligent hauntings will pick up on much of what we're doing. Like when you were saying earlier how, you know, you went to see this haunting and you had all your equipment, nothing was happening, but as soon as you turned it off, boom, you got pushed. I think a lot of people go in thinking that these hauntings don't really know what this equipment is. But even if it's an intelligent haunting from, like, you know, the 1500s, 1400s, somebody who wouldn't necessarily know what some of these devices are, if they've been investigated enough times in modern day, they will pick up and learn what these pieces of equipment are, you know? So unless it's a residual haunting, that's the only time where maybe you can capture something on a semi-regular basis. But with that said, you know, we were using a digital voice recorder, two cameras, and we tried using a voice box, which was actually in an app on Justin's phone, which is an interesting experience. I never can really tell if the apps work or not. So, but it was cool. You know, we were there late. His wife, Shelly, was asking questions, and he and I both are sensitive. Justin calls it sensitive. I call it discernment. And that's more of, you know, where our beliefs are kind of separated a little. You know, for me, I tend to feel negative entities much more than I ever felt positive ones, where Justin can kind of feel both. And so in this case, we both felt some type of presence at this one tree, this one willow tree. And we knew that there is supposedly like a witch of some sort that hung around at this tree, the ghost of a witch. And so we were drawn to it and we're asking questions, and we're probably about 45 minutes into the, into our investigation. And Shelly asked a question, and all of a sudden she kind of screamed, ouch, you know, and she looked down and I guess she felt like she got pinched or grabbed on her leg, on her calf. And what we could tell, it was kind of dark, but we were using our flashlights. It looked like there was a red spot there, as if something did just grab her. And it kind of shook her a little bit. And of course, me and Justin were like, oh my, we got to jump on this right now. Again, you know, something's happening. So, you know, we're trying to call it out, ask more questions. Justin and I are very careful with antagonizing spirits. In the past, we used to do it a lot.
I was going to say, we didn't used to always be careful.
Nowadays, we have much more respect. But, you know, we still like to try to raise the spirit's attention, give them a little push, you know, in hopes that they push back a little. And unfortunately, we didn't get much other than a few names that seemed to correlate over the questions. You know, they seemed to be actual intelligent responses to what we were asking, such as the name of the person who had touched his wife, what had happened there in this particular area, you know, things like that. And one thing I think is important to note is just to the right of this tree, there's actually grave markers. It's not actually a grave, but it's graveyard marker. So there's eight giant rocks that form a huge triangle or a rectangle across the entire yard. And these markings is the outskirt or the perimeter of what is basically a graveyard. It's where bodies were buried and then eventually forgotten about. They built this park and they marked it with one rock that has the stamp on it that says what it was. And that's it. The bodies weren't moved or anything. So this is like an active graveyard where spirits are probably roaming. So yeah, you know, it's really interesting. And I took some photos where, again, I had like some photos were most photos were really clear, but a couple of them were fuzzy and I don't know why. It didn't make sense. It's not like I was moving the camera, you know, it was just steady shot, you know, and I have a stabilizer in there. So that's another thing. But yeah, you know, it was a very interesting little thing. And you know, for Justin and I, we don't get too scared when it comes to ghosts or anything. But when we're walking back to the car and we have all the trees around and we start thinking of monsters, like cryptids, werewolves and stuff like that, that's when we start walking a little faster.
You guys are from North Dakota.
I live in North Dakota now. Both Eric and I both grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. Eric still lives in Cleveland, Ohio. But I had moved out here about 10 years ago. And yeah, it was 2010, so 11 years ago. But we still do the podcast together. When we did those investigations, that was the first time we've done an investigation together in, I guess, 10 years, 11 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was getting to a year. North Dakota, there's a lot of Native American Indian burial grounds
mm-hmm.
in your area.
Yeah.
You haven't come across any of that hauntings? Like, say, you know, when they build something over a burial ground, they've done it here. I hear a lot of that from North and South Dakota.
I mean, let's be honest, the entire United States were burial grounds for Native Americans before we got here. I haven't really had any experience with it. A lot of Native American tribes here are very closed mouth when it comes to talking about their beliefs, traditions, legends, stories. So I mean, it's very much possible that we have hauntings because of that. But as far as experiencing it myself, no.
A cryptid. I found this one really the monster. A cryptid in New Orleans, like a shark, just known to attack families and pets, and people are missing.
No, I think that was the Grunch in New Orleans. Yeah, the Grunch was an interesting one.
I found that very interesting. You know, that something is killing these pets and people are disappearing.
Right.
Yeah, it was interesting because it's kind of linked to the chupacabra, and I had never heard this legend before. I don't think Eric had either.
Right. Yeah. No. This is like one of those things where Justin and I are late at night surfing the web for the next episode, and we came across the Grunch. And it's like kind of a weird name. But it's actually called the Grunch because it's a creature that was seen on Grunch Road, which is in New Orleans. And it is a very much like a chupacabra type of creature, considered to be a cross between like a canine and a reptilian creature, basically. So very much like a chupacabra. It had very sharp teeth, especially two fangs. And sometimes it's seen as having a full mouth of razor sharp teeth.
Sounds like a skinwalker.
Yeah, it absolutely does. You know, and it's really interesting. Like, so the thing with like creatures like this is it really depends on the person who's seen it. And depending on what time of day you saw it, you know, what is your, you know, what's your conscience like? Have you been drinking? Are you sober? You know, that kind of stuff. You know, it's been seen as looking more like a goat. Like creature, and when you consider okay, canine/reptilian, and then all of a sudden it's a goat. It's right, two very right. different creatures. But yeah, you know, and it's one of those creatures in Louisiana that's just it ties in with some of these other creatures down there too. Like the rougarou is one, the skink ape is another, the honey island swamp monster is another. They've got a lot down there, and you have to consider that, especially in the New Orleans area, but just throughout all of Louisiana, history runs really deep and rich. You got all kinds of people coming there throughout the years, from Haiti, from Africa, from the north of America. And, you know, when all this comes together, different religions, you know, Haitian hoodoo, voodoo, Christianity, all meddling together and end up with all these interesting creatures, you know. And it's really kind of cool when you consider the history in this type of city. And the state itself, and realize where some of these creatures are actually coming from.
You had another episode too, where I think it was the one I was getting to was the monsters myths of the high seas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was yeah. the one with the was that the one with the shark with the
that was with the sharktopus, yeah,
75 to 200 foot long creature.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That and the black demon, we decided to pair together because they're both shark creatures.
You started to show off with the UFOs. And Bigfoot, if they're related or not, you know, okay. And that was thrown at me a couple of years ago. And I had a gentleman on the show and he asked me a question, you know, threw me off, you know, that if I thought UFOs and Bigfoot were connected. I never thought about it. You know, I really didn't. Abundance of UFOs go with the abundance of Bigfoot. So it's like, are they related? But that really attracted me because especially with the new UFO studies by the Pentagon. And
the recent release of all the documentation on some of those UFOs that the Navy has seen. It's crazy.
So have you come across anything that's demonic?
In investigations?
Yes.
No, I don't think so. I mean, so usually... when it comes to demonic or evil entities, there's a very, very strong line between something that's evil and something that's just, maybe it's evil. You know, like you got bad people, bad spirits, but then you've got really dark spirits. So the big thing to understand, like when it comes to demonic hauntings, is that there's a very thick line between what's demonic and what's just a bad person or a bad spiritual haunting. You know, a bad guy who's a spirit, sure, there's going to be some negativity. There's going to be a certain amount of oppression maybe on the victims, whoever's in the house. But a demonic haunting is, and I'm sure it's been said so many times, it's just dangerous. And there's a reason, you know, unlike a human spirit that happens to be a bad person, a demonic one is going to start off very playful. Probably they could probably start off as a poltergeist or even appear as a little child, a little girl, especially to try to cause the person, whoever's living in the home or whoever's running the business, to open their heart to them, their mind, to be like, oh, this is just a child. And once they do that, they invite the spirit in. And that's when you start to see the manifestation of these darker things. And that can be something that's really very Hollywood, which is like the three knocking noises, you know, to mimic the Holy Trinity. There's this whole idea that they turn up crosses upside down, which, by the way, in historical sense, the inverted crucifix isn't actually a demonic thing or a Satan thing. That was something that was made up by Hollywood. In fact, one of the greatest apostles that ever lived was crucified upside down, Peter. So if nothing more, that shows a symbol of humility, but Hollywood kind of flipped that on its head. So we see this idea of the upside down crucifix as being evil. And because of that being modern times, these demonic entities will mimic it because they know that's what humanity fears now. Same with things like the pentagram and, you know, those type of symbols. You get this very originally approachable haunting that turns into a very bad manifestation of all these dark things happening. Nightmares, night terrors start. You start seeing these black masses. You start feeling like you can't control your own emotions. You become depressed. Maybe you fall into anger, whatever your weaknesses are, drinking, you know, alcoholism, all that kind of stuff plays into it because these demonic entities know your weaknesses. And that's what they play into. So that's something to look out for. And Justin can confirm that when we walk into a building or even just onto the property, for me, since I'm a sensitive to negative entities or energies, as soon as we approach the property, I get this like really thick, heavy feeling on my chest, this weight in my head, like almost feels foggy and heavy at the same time. I get headaches. And anytime I get that, it's usually that discernment telling me there's something negative here. You know, something similar might be like extremely humid temperatures. You know, is something that's when you walk outside and just feels really wet and heavy, you know, that type of feeling, only the heat isn't there. It's usually much colder than that. So it's really weird. And in our investigations, we've never encountered a demonic entity. You know, like I said earlier in our conversation, I went through 3 months of demonic oppression, which was only relieved after becoming a born again Christian and, you know, accepting Christ into my life. That's when it stopped. And yet I'm still plagued by those hauntings occasionally. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, the devil's always like, don't forget I'm here. You know, he doesn't want you to forget. But yeah, you know, I think for Justin and I, the most negative thing we've really come across was two instances. One, we were doing an investigation at Indigo Lake, which is in Cleveland, Ohio. And there was an entity there known as the Wraith. And we were using a spirit box session. And we kept getting this voice saying that it wanted to kill us, murder, blood, you know, those type of words over and over and over again, which was a little intimidating, you know, considering this is an entity that we can't see. And often mm-hmm. these entities, if they wanted to, can attach themselves if you don't take precautions, which thankfully Justin and I always do. So that was one. And then the other that I can remember offhand wasn't really so much affecting us, but it was affecting a little child. It was a home, a residence that we did an investigation for. And this child was seeing some sort of entity. It reminded him like a TV monster that he's seen that was up in the corner of his room. And it would plague him almost every night. You know, we just saw what it did to this child and the child's parents. You know, it's like something we didn't witness on our own, but we witnessed it through the eyes and the voice of this family. And we did what we could to help them. It's tough because sometimes residents, you know, they want to know what happened, but they don't always want the help, you know, to get rid of it. They kind of want to handle it themselves. They don't want to be seen as crazy. I know when we went to this house, they didn't want a bunch of cars there. So it was just me, Justin, well, our team. So it was like three of us. And then this one woman from another team who joined us, we all went in one car, parked in the driveway. So it just looked like we're just hanging out. You know, they didn't want their neighbors to know. So that's usually what those type of things are like, you know, at these residents.
Yeah, they probably didn't want you coming out in your Ghostbusters.
Yeah. You know, funny story, though, is every time Justin and I would go on an investigation, we'd always play the Ghostbusters theme song. Get us pumped up for it.
Do you guys ever use any like trigger items, like toys or cigarettes, or, you know, try to lure that? If you know the person you're trying to bring out, do you bring anything with you to lure them out?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so it depends on the situation and it depends on where we're investigating. So one that I can tell you of, Justin and I years ago did an investigation at Jeffrey Dahmer's childhood home in Bath, Ohio. And this was the place where he killed Stephen Hicks. So it was his first murder was conducted here. So it was really cool in a not cool as in it's cool, but, you know, cool in a investigative way to be on this premises where something so horrible happened. But to be like, wow, this is where I'm standing, where I'm sitting, you know, this is where he hit him in the head with the dumbbell. And this underneath the house is where he separated the bones from the flesh. Like, that's really effed up, you know? Mm-hmm. But we're sitting there like, this is reality. And during that investigation, there were nails that we have used. He actually had nails in the trees still from when he was a kid. He used to pin frogs and various animals up to the trees and they would suffer hanging there. He would sometimes cut them open or just leave them to die. But we ended up using, I don't know if you remember this, Justin, but in the backyard, we had some nails that were on the ground. We kind of put up there on a piece of wood to see if he would move any of them, you know, see if anything or anyone would move anything, you know, and that's something that we use as a trigger object. When we use trigger objects, we like to use something that was actually used by the individual that we're investigating. Yeah. You know, I know like some investigators will bring a toy with them for a little kid. We've never did an investigation that involved a little kid in terms of the kid being a spirit. So we've never done anything like that, but something like these nails that were literally kind of the nail in the coffin, only in this case the tree for Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, we use that and nothing happened. We didn't get anything out of it, but it's kind of cool to use those little things because you never know what that type of trigger can do. You know, you might ramp up a haunting real fast and get all types of energy, but other times, depending on the spirit, they might withdraw and be like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to revisit that. I don't want to be a part of this, you know?
So what do you have coming up? What's in the plans? What's in the works?
Lots of stuff, actually. We're going to keep going with the creatures and mysteries of the high seas. We do have a couple of guests lined up, but coming up to spooky season, it's one of our favorite times of year. And then Christmas time, we always get excited for Christmas time too, not just in the sense of the holiday, but we've done shows that cover every part of the gamut when it comes to Christmas. So we're going to try and mix it up a little bit this year and get on some people that would be interesting for Halloween, which I found a lady who's supposedly a descendant of Bram Stoker. We're trying to get her on. We're looking into maybe having on somebody who practices Wicca or says they're a witch or something like that, mm-hmm. just to go outside the box. Cause we haven't had a guest on that say they're a witch per se. We've had a voodoo practitioner. Eric and I were uncomfortable a little bit during the interview. We'll just leave it at that. Not anything with magic or anything, but
we could talk about that after we stop recording.
and you know, we've talked to so many people, but somebody who specifically says I'm a witch, we've never talked to before. So we thought Halloween would be a great time for that. But yeah, a lot of great stuff coming up. Got something in the works. Can't really release anything on it yet, but something very big for Paratruth Radio. And I think that people are, I mean, still the same show and all that stuff, but we're going to be working hand in hand with some people. So stay tuned for that as well, because we're really excited about that.
What links can they go to?
You can email us at paratruthradio@gmail.com. You can just literally Google Paratruth Radio and you can find any link you want. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all Paratruth or Paratruth Radio, it'll come up. And of course, we're currently working on a new website. So that's going to be up soon. We'll be putting that info out in over the next month or so. And that'll be really fun because we're going to have a lot of interactive stuff on there. We're going to have blogs and vlogs and some cool little videos that we do these things called paramixologies. And it's actually Jess and I, we come up with our own alcoholic beverages based on paranormal creatures and ghosts and stuff like that. So it's really fun. You know, we did it years ago and people got a kick out of it. Been bugging us for years to do it. And we luckily got like three more episodes that I'm working on. So we'll be getting those out soon. But yeah, it's, you know, the website's gonna be a lot of fun. I think we're gonna get a lot of interaction there and be able to create a nice network of people to talk.
Well, you guys got a great show and keep it going.
Thank you.
I want to thank you very much for coming on today and sharing your stories and your podcast and everything with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Eric, from the Paratruth Radio podcast. It was my pleasure and my honor to have you on the show today. I love sharing other people's podcasts, and especially if it's in the same when it's in the same realm of paranormal activity as my own show. They are excellent at what they do. So please click on the links in the show notes and go to Paratruth Radio Podcast. Rate and review on Apple. I'm sure you will enjoy their podcast as much as I do. We'll see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.